Vishnupad, Paramahamsa, Paragrajikacharya, Asatara Sata Sri Shimadis Divine Grace, Asi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj, Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Jai.
ISKCON founder, Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Jai.
Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai.
Jai.
Acharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai.
Jai.
Aim Shikaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai.
Jai.
Shri Radha Krishna Go Gopinath Shyama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai.
Jai.
Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai. Mathura Dhamma
Ki Jai.
Bhakti Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai.
Jai.
Ganga Mayajuna Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti
Jai.
Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai.
Jai.
Samaveda Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai.
Jai.
Gaur Premananda.
Hari Hari Bol.
All glories to the assembled devotees.
Hare Krishna.
All glories to the assembled devotees.
Hare Krishna.
All glories to the assembled devotees.
Hare Krishna.
All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Sri Prabhupada. All Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pachani Nivasesa Sanyani Paskachade Satarme Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavam Cha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Padichana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
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 July 11th, 2013, Hilo, Hawaii, class over Skype, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 7, The Son of Jonah Punished, Text 32. Prajopadravam Alaksha.
Prajopadravam Alaksha.
Lokyavati Karam Chatam.
Okavyati Karam Chatam.
Matam Chavasudevasya.
Vasudevasya
Sanjahar Arjuno Dryam
Sanjahar Arjuno Dryam.
Please chant. Praja.
Praja.
The people in general.
The people in general.
Upadravam.
Upadravam.
Disturbance.
Disturbance.
Alaksha.
Disturbance.
Alaksha.
Having seen it.
Alaksha.
Having seen it.
Loka.
Loka.
The planets.
The planets.
Vyatikaram.
The planets.
Vyatikaram.
Destruction.
Destruction.
Cha.
Cha.
Also.
Also.
Tum.
Tum.
That.
That.
Matam cha.
Matam cha.
And the opinion.
And the opinion.
Vasudevasya.
Vasudevasya.
Of Vasudev Shri Krishna.
Of Vasudev Shri Krishna.
Sanjahara.
Sanjahara.
Retracted.
Retracted.
Arjunaha.
Arjuna.
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 Dwayam.
Dwayam.
Both the weapons. Translation in purport by Srila Prabhupada. Thus seeing the disturbance of the general populace and the imminent destruction of the planets, Arjuna at once retracted both Brahmastra weapons as Lord Krishna desired. Purport. The theory that the modern atomic bomb explosions can annihilate the world is childish imagination. First of all, the atomic energy is not powerful enough to destroy the world. And secondly, ultimately it all rests on the supreme will of the Supreme Lord. Because without his will or sanction, nothing can be built up or destroyed. It is foolish also to think that natural laws are ultimately powerful. Material nature's laws work under the direction of the Lord, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. The Lord says there that natural laws work under his supervision. The world can be destroyed only by the will of the Lord and not by the whims of tiny politicians. Lord Shri Krishna desired that the weapons released by both Droni and Arjuna be withdrawn, and it was carried out by Arjuna at once. Similarly, there are many agents of the all-powerful Lord, and by his will only can one execute what he desires. Prajo padravam alakshya lokavyati karam chatam matam cha vasudevasya sanjahar arjuno dvayam. Thus seeing the disturbance of the general populace and the imminent destruction of the planets, Arjuna at once retracted both Brahmastra weapons as Lord Shri Krishna desired. So here Arjuna is protecting the praja, the people. He's a kshatriya. It's his business to protect the people. Even the modern governments in Kali Yuga, they have this idea that they should protect the people. Prabhupada, in speaking on this verse, says how even in London, even in England, although they lost their empire, he said, still they're giving the public free education and free medical care. So this is the natural and the proper position of government. Similarly, all of us have the duty to protect something or someone. We are all supposed to act as protectors of something or someone when there is a disturbance. Praja upadravyam, disturbance. Alaksha, having seen, when we see there's a disturbance, we are also supposed to protect. But we are supposed to protect as servants, not masters. So Arjuna here is protecting. He's not an impersonalist. He's not just detached. He's not just saying, oh, well, Krishna's in control. Everybody's going to get blown up. I'm out of here. I'll just sit down and meditate. What does Krishna want? Prabhupada makes the point here that none of us can destroy or protect independently. The scientists cannot destroy the world independently, and nor can anybody protect independently. Krishna is both the protector and the destroyer, and we can only act as servant protectors, or perhaps servant destroyers also. So we have a natural urge to protect something. Everyone has a natural urge to protect something, to take care of something. And this urge is expressed in different ways. It can be divided into the four varnas. So the brahmanas have an urge to protect knowledge. If someone has a brahminical nature, then as soon as they are aware, here, alaksha, having seen, as soon as one becomes aware by seeing, by hearing, whatever, that knowledge is being distorted, then they want to protect it. And the kshatriyas have a natural urge to protect people. As soon as they are aware that there is injustice and unfairness, that some people are not being properly taken care of, immediately
they want to protect. Some want to protect wealth and natural resources and animals. As soon as they see that the animals are being exploited, or as soon as they see the trees are being cut down, or wealth is being unfairly distributed or unfairly earned, then they want to do something about it. They want to protect it. And then there are those who want to protect the things and the skills when they see that the labor is being exploited, right? Then they want to protect the essence of skills, how we make our goods, how clothing is made and furniture is made and music and dance and all of the services for society. There are those who want to see that the skills are properly passed down from one generation to the other and the dignity of labor is maintained. So everyone has some area that they need to protect. And then there's also, of course, according to ashrama. So those in the grihastha ashram, they have an urge to protect their family. The husband has a natural urge to protect his wife and his children, his elderly parents, to take care of the family. Just like I see here, my daughter, her family have just moved to the island. My son lives here. And there's a natural urge to want to take care of each other. Brother sees his sister needs something, he wants to help her out. The mother sees the son needs something, she wants to help him out. The son sees the elderly mother needs something, he wants to help. It's a natural proclivity that one wants to help one's family members. And in the renounced orders, one wants to help the world in spiritual knowledge. So this is natural. Of course, we often get frustrated at our ability to be protectors, or perhaps to be destroyers also, although we're going to focus on protection in this today, because we're not always able to protect. Sometimes we are able to, and sometimes we're not. Right, as Prahlad Maharaj said, despite the best efforts, right, a boat may not save a drowning person, a physician may not save a patient, the parents may not be able to save the child. You may try to protect your child, and your child may die anyway. There was some news article recently, there was some parade, maybe for the 4th of July, and there was both father and son were in the parade, and somehow the son had fallen off of the cart that he was on, the float he was on, and the father ran over his own son without realizing it and killed his own son. So we're not the ultimate protectors. One may have to see one's beloved wife or child die in front of your eyes from some disease or some accident about which you can do nothing. One may have to stand by and see knowledge desecrated and the people desecrated, or the environment or the skills, and not be able to do anything about it. Our ability to do something is not absolute. It's very relative. And sometimes we may respond to this frustration as, all right, I just won't do anything. I'll just give up. But that's not appropriate. What's appropriate is to act as a servant. And Krishna deals with this conundrum in the Bhagavad Gita, both in the 3rd chapter and in the 18th chapter, which we'll look at the end of this class, where Krishna is talking about whether or not we're able to walk away from being protectors, or whether or not we protect as part of our service. So what is this mood that the devotee has? Prabhupada's talking about this. He says, the natural law works under the direction of the Lord. The world can be destroyed only by the will of the Lord, not by the whims of any tiny politician. Lord Shri Krishna desired the weapons released by both Droni and Arjuna be withdrawn, and it was carried out by Arjuna at once. Similarly, there are many agents of the all-powerful Lord, and by his will only can one execute what he desires. So we are all agents of the Lord. It's not that just the demigods are agents of the Lord or Arjuna. We're all meant to be agents of the Lord. Jivara Swarupaya Krishna and Nityadasa. Ekala Ishwara Krishna. Ayasarva Vritya. We're all meant to be servants. We're all meant to carry out the direction of the Lord. So the consciousness that the devotee has, we're going to talk about consciousness, we're going to talk about action. The consciousness that the devotee has is Krishna is the only protector. everyone else is fallible, and that everyone else includes me. Now, often we talk about this concept in terms of, I cannot take shelter of anybody else but Krishna. I can't take shelter of the brahmanas or the kshatriyas or the vaishyas or the shudras or my husband or my father or anybody, or some organization. I can't take shelter as some absolute protector of anybody other than God. Only Krishna can give one ultimate protection. Of course, if Krishna's devotee protects you, then Krishna will also protect you. That's a fact, that Krishna will protect someone who's under the shelter of his devotees. But the point is that Krishna is doing the protection. The devotee is not protecting. No jiva is protecting independently of Krishna. That's not possible. That's not possible. And when Srivas Thakur's son died, although Srivas Thakur's wife and female family members were crying, and they were certainly also devotees, Lord Chaitanya said that even a dog that's Srivas Thakur's house is dear to him. Srivas Thakur's maidservants, etc., manservants were dear to him. But still, it was the will of Lord Chaitanya that the child go on to another situation. And of course, when the child came back to that body temporarily by the will of the Lord and said, I'm just moving as a servant, everybody was pacified. So usually we talk in that way, that only the Lord is the protector in terms of whom we take shelter. But today we're going to look at it in terms of, can I be the shelter? Is it possible for me to be the shelter? Can I have this ahankar, this abhiman, that I am the protector, I am the shelter, I can take care of people, or again, you know, I can destroy something, I can protect something, or I can destroy something. So no, the devotee sees only Krishna can protect. So if I take the role of a protector, if I say I am somebody's mother, I'm someone's father, I'm someone's husband, I'm someone's wife, I'm a soldier for my country, I'm a scholar, whatever it may be, that I'm acting only according to the Lord's pleasure and the Lord's will. You know, we say, I serve at the pleasure of my country. I serve at the will of my country. So the devotee is saying, I serve at the will of God. However, if he wants something to be protected, then I will be able to do it. If he wants something to be destroyed, I will be able to do it. Otherwise, I will not be able to. I cannot act independently. Frankly, I cannot even protect myself independently. If I could, then I would never get sick, and I would never get injured, and frankly, I wouldn't get old. I would never lose any money, and so forth and so on. But the fact is that we do. Our bodies age, despite our efforts to keep them healthy and youthful. Our bodies get sick. Our bodies get injured. Generally speaking, mentally healthy people do not intentionally do these things. They do everything they can to avoid them. And still, so if I'm not able to fully protect myself, how can I protect others? Nor can one actually even destroy oneself. There's a funny story of Vasistha. Vasistha and Vishvamitra were, for a long time, enemies. Vishvamitra was envious of Vasistha's wish-fulfilling cow. He asked Vasistha to give him the cow. Vasistha refused. And there was a huge war between Vishvamitra, when Vishvamitra was a kshatriya, and Vasistha. Vishvamitra killed all of Vasistha's children. I think Vasistha had 100 children. And Vasistha, understandably, was rather depressed. So he decided he was going to commit suicide, but he wasn't able to do so. When he jumped into water to drown himself, the water pushed him back to the shore. When he jumped on top of some sharp rocks from a cliff, the rocks became like mattresses and so forth and so on. He made many attempts, and he wasn't able even to destroy himself. He finally then, one of his daughter-in-laws was pregnant, and he heard his grandson from within his daughter-in-law's womb reciting the Vedas. At that point, he decided that he was not going to try to commit suicide anymore. But the point is, we cannot even destroy ourselves without the sanction of the supreme will. What to speak of anything else? what to speak of as Prabhupada saying you're trying to destroy the planet or a city. Or we're not independent. We're dependent beings. So the devotee has this mentality. I am a dependent being. I can only protect by the will of the Lord. And you might say, well, why does the Lord engage anyone else? Why do anything? Why not just let the Lord do all the protecting and the destroying, and, you know, I just do nothing? I don't know. What would I do then? I suppose I'd just go up to the Himalayas and sit in a cave and meditate and let Krishna take care of everything. So we might ask, why does Krishna want to engage others? Here it says there's many agents of the all-powerful Lord. So there's two answers to that. The first answer is that if you're a conditioned soul, then you have some false ego. You have some concept of yourself as a protector of something, as a doer of something. Ahankara vimuhatma kartaham iti manyate. One sees that I am the doer. And therefore that has to be engaged somehow or other. You know, one has to engage that somehow or other in something. And this is what Krishna explains very nicely in the Bhagavad Gita. And we can look at those verses there. So Krishna explains this in chapter 3 and chapter 18. It's practically a repeat. So in chapter 3, it's text 30 to 33. He says, Mayi sarvani karmani sanyas yad yatmatejasa nir ashir nirmano bhutva yudyasva vigata jvara. Therefore, O Arjuna, surrendering all your works unto me with full knowledge of me, without desires for profit, with no claims to proprietorship, and free from lethargy, fight. So Krishna is here saying, fight as a servant, not as a master. And then text 31, he says, Ye me matam midam nityam anutistani manava shradhavanto nasyuyanto muchante pi karmavi. Those persons who execute their duties according to my injunctions and who follow this teaching faithfully without envy become free from the bondage of fruitive actions. So if we act that way as a servant, then there's no karma. And then the opposite is given in the next verse, 32. Ye tve tad abhyasyutyanto na nutishtani me matam sarva gnana vimudhamsta vidhi nastam achetasa. We have this mudha word again here. But those who out of envy disregard these teaching and do not follow them regularly are to be considered bereft of all knowledge, befooled, and ruined in their endeavors for perfection. So Krishna is saying here, only an envious fool will try to act as an independent doer. And can you do nothing? No, that is not possible. Next text, 33. Sadvisham chetate swaya prakriter gyanavam api. Gyanavanapi, even a learned person, prakritim yanti bhutani nigraha kim karishyati. Even a man of knowledge acts according to his own nature, for everyone follows the nature he has acquired from the three modes. What can repression accomplish? So Krishna is here making it very clear. You can act in a detached way, without desires for profit, with no claim to proprietorship, and free from lethargy. And he says, you have your nature. Your choice is to act according to my instructions without envy, and then you'll be free from bondage, or to be envious and act according to yourself. And this is repeated in the 18th chapter, 58 through 60. We'll just go through the translations. If you become conscious of me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. If, however, you do not work in such consciousness, but act through false ego, not hearing me, you will be lost. If you do not act according to my directions and do not fight, then you will be falsely directed. By your nature, you will have to be engaged in warfare. Under illusion, you are now declining to act according to my direction, but compelled by the work born of your own nature. You will act all the same, O son of Kunti. Here, this Sanskrit is svabhava yena kunteya. Swabhava, your own nature. And Krishna is saying, even a jnani Well, it doesn't matter if you're a jnani. Jnani, not jnani. We have a particular nature. So the first reason is we have a particular conditioned nature, and we're going to use it. So the choice is, do we use it as a servant, or do we use it enviously and foolishly? And of course, we see the truth of this all around us. It's not that Brahmin, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Sudras have disappeared. It's just that people, instead of protecting as the agent of God, they're exploiting. There are still people inclined to work with wealth, natural resources, and animals, but instead of protecting them as an agent of God, they're exploiting them for their own sense gratification. There are still people inclined to the arts and the skills, but instead of protecting them as an agent of God, they're exploiting them for their own sense gratification. There are still people inclined to take care of people, but instead of protecting them as an agent of God, they're exploiting them. It's like I just heard yesterday, one of the first things President Obama did when he came into office was he restored the funding that the former President Bush had stopped to the UN for birth control and abortion and sterilization in third world countries. And so the UN is going into places like India, going into Indian villages and offering the villagers, if you sterilize, have your wife sterilize, we'll give you a computer, we'll give you a car, we'll give you this, we'll give you that. And the woman comes in to be sterilized. I would assume that in many cases she's being forced by the husband who wants the gizmo. And they do the surgery, and then after the surgery they just dump her out in a field without any further medical attention, without any painkillers after the surgery and so on. And they don't even give the family the gizmo that they've promised. And this is being funded, at least in part, by the American government. So we still have people who have an inclination to be the master of people, but instead of protecting them as agents of the Lord, they're exploiting them. And we still have people who are inclined to take care of knowledge, but instead of protecting it as the agent of the Lord, they're exploiting it. They go in front of the people, and with their scientific degrees, their, as Prabhupada would say, bombastic words, their atmosphere of authority, I am a big scientist, and there is no God. Everything came about by chance. So Krishna's point is, you're going to act in a particular way. That cannot be stopped. That cannot be stopped. Or the ashrams. I mean, people are trying to avoid the responsibility of marriage. But they're not actually avoiding it. They're not able to be celibate. They're not able to avoid accumulating money and having a home and all the trappings of household life. But they're just doing it in a nasty way. They're doing it with birth control, with abortion, with going from one partner to another, and so forth. And so many things that we could mention. So they're still doing it, but they're doing it in a wrong way. They're doing it in an exploitive way. So that's the first reason why we should actually protect as Krishna's agents, because there's some area we're going to deal with anyway. We're not going to be able to repress our nature. We're not. It's not going to be possible. Krishna says it's only an illusion that you think you cannot act. So if I'm going to act anyway, according to my nature and according to my designation, according to my upadis, I am the mother of these children, I am the father of these children, I am the husband of this wife, I am the this, I am the that. Why not do it for Krishna? And Krishna says that if you do it for him, that doing it for him will lead to your liberation. It's not just some sort of concession. Well, you're going to do it anywhere, I do it for Krishna. But it'd be better if you didn't. No, Krishna's not saying it'd be better if you don't do it. He's saying that if you do it for him, you will become free from bondage to work, and you'll become liberated. And then you can say, all right, well, suppose somebody's not a conditioned soul. Suppose somebody really didn't have sarvapati vanirmuktam tatparatena nirmala rishikesha rishikena sevanam bhakti ruchite, even if you're free from all designations. Sarvapati vanirmuktam, even if you have no upadis. Even if you don't think, I'm a protector of knowledge, I'm a protector of skills, I'm a protector of this, whatever. Still, the devotee acts as the agent of the Lord. Of course, what's motivating such a person is different. So in the first case, one changes one's designation from I'm doing this as an independent doer, I'm doing this for my own satisfaction. One changes that to I'm doing this as a dependent doer for the satisfaction of the Lord. But there's still some sense of I am this. There's still some upadhi. Whereas in the second instance, free from upadhi, the only designation is reality. That I am a servant of the Lord. I'm not anything independently. I'm not a Brahmin, I'm not a Kshatriya, I'm not a Vaishya, I'm not a Sudra, I'm not a Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyasi. I'm not an American, I'm not an Indian, I'm not a man, I'm not a woman, I'm not any of these things. I am simply the servant of the servant of the servant of the gopi. Sarva dharma and pritcha dharma may come sharnam vaja. Aham tam sarva pape vyamokshi shami masi jahadat. I don't have anything to do with these things. And why am I taking this role in the world? Just as Leela. As a playful reciprocation with Krishna. As a playful reciprocation with Guru. I'm doing this as my service to Guru and Krishna. And not because I personally have any stake or any attachment or any business in the world. And of course, one comes to this platform by working on the first platform. So by starting off with my ahankara and with my upadhi, how wonderful Krishna is that he's able to use the very aspects of our entanglement as the means to our freedom. Take out a thorn with another thorn, the Bhagavatam says. Or as Narada Muni says, does not a thing, when applied therapeutically, cure a disease which is caused by that very same thing? So that is, of course, the whole science of bhakti yoga. And one of the major differences between the personal path and the impersonal path. Of course, you can do karma yoga and jnana yoga also on the impersonal path. But one of the main aspects of our preaching is that you can take your upadhi-driven, your ahankara-driven, your false ego, your material designation-driven work, and you start to change your thinking. You start to say, instead of I'm doing this because this is my nature and it's for my enjoyment, you say, I'm doing this because it's my nature and it's meant to be used in Krishna's service as a servant. And after a while, it's, I don't really have a material nature. You know, this body and mind still has its inclinations, of course. But I have nothing to do with that. I have another identity. But I'm using this body and mind in Krishna's service as he likes, as part of a game, as part of a drama. As one of my dear friends likes to put it, you know, if Krishna's asked you to play in a drama, then you play the role well. You play the role well. My daughter was telling me how she did this drama about Kurma Avatar in Mayapur with her students in the international school. They're like 7, 8 years old, little children. So they did the drama 3 times. And the first 2 times was wonderful. But by the third time, they were a little tired of being in the drama. They're just little children. So in the drama, they would break out of character and start acting like themselves instead of like the character that they were playing. So you see this sometimes. Right, I saw this even one of my granddaughters is in a Shakespeare play here in Hilo. We went to go see her in the performance. So, of course, she notices us in the audience, and she breaks out of character to some extent and is kind of waving to us from the back. So, when you're in a drama, you're supposed to get into that character for the sake of the drama. So, that's what we're doing. If we're above the modes of nature, and then we get into the character for the sake of the drama, for the sake of play, for the sake of pleasing Krishna, and without any ahankara. So these are the principles, that Krishna is the only protector and the only destroyer, and we are fallible beings. Our role, therefore, whether we're conditioned or liberated, is to act in our area, in our natural area, without repression, without walking away, as Krishna's agent. So what does this mean we have to do? First of all, we have to recognize what is our area. What is our nature? What are we meant to protect? And then to do it as a service. That's mostly a matter of changing your consciousness. It's really interesting. People often ask, what should I change externally? But as soon as you change your consciousness, you'll know what to change externally. People often want to know what to change externally without changing their consciousness. It doesn't work that way. You can't figure it out. But as soon as I'm thinking, this wife is given to me by Krishna for me to take care of for her sake, and to what extent I can actually protect her, that's up to Krishna. But I do my duty without attachment, without false ego, and without lethargy, as Krishna says. When we look at that again, what does he say here again in 3:30? Surrendering all your works unto me with full knowledge of me, without desires for profit and with no claims to proprietorship, and free from lethargy. So I'm not going to be lazy taking care of my wife, nor am I taking care of my wife to get something from her. I'm not taking care of my wife so she'll be more inclined to have sex with me, or more inclined to cook me a nice meal, or even so she'll be nicer to me. I'm taking care of my wife because this is my service that Krishna has given me. I don't own her, I'm not her proprietor, nor am I lazy. I'm trying to please Krishna. And then if I do that, then I get free from the bondage of all works. And then I will know how to take care of my wife. Because as soon as I do that, then Krishna will reveal to me from within my heart, I'll be able to read the scriptures and understand them properly. The cloud of my false ego in my reading the scriptures will be at least partially removed. I'll be able to understand what the guru is saying. Otherwise, if we don't change that inner consciousness, we can go on hearing from guru and reading the shastra and hearing from the sadhus to the end of time, and it won't make any difference. We'll have this cloud over our consciousness. So by hearing from guru, sadhu, and shastra, we have to make an inner determination. Let me change my mentality. That I am protecting as a servant, not as a master. I'm not independent. If Krishna wants my protection to be effective, it will be. If Krishna wants my destruction to be effective, it will be. And if not, it won't be. And I just do my duty according to his will. And when we act in that consciousness, we will become more and more and more aware of what his will is. We'll become more and more aware of what his will is, and we'll be able to act in harmony with that. So that is our business, to examine what is my nature, and how should I use it as a servant, in what mentality, without attachment to the results, free from proprietorship and free from lethargy. We see here Arjuna, he's not lethargic, nor is he thinking himself a proprietor. Matam cha vasudevasya. Along with the opinion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So all of us are meant to act like Arjuna, to protect as a servant, not as a master. So questions, comments? Any questions?
Thank you for this wonderful class.
If no one else has a question, I can always come up with with one. So Mother, we had talked about taking shelter of Krishna, and we know in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna told Arjuna, Kuntiya pratijanihi nama bhaktya pranashyati, that my devotee is never vanquished. If we have full absolute faith in Krishna and Krishna's protection, but to what degree do we depend upon Krishna for protection? Say, for example, we have an illness. Some may say if we have absolute faith in God, God will heal us. We see this in other religious denominations. They won't go to a doctor. But from our perspective, sometimes it seems like maybe we should go to see the doctor. That's practical. Krishna can act through the doctor. Or should we have absolute faith and say, well, no, Krishna can heal me? What are your thoughts in that regard?
Whether you go to the doctor or you don't go to the doctor, the only person who's healing you is Krishna. So it's, again, it's a matter of your consciousness, and if you have the right consciousness, then you'll get direction from Krishna whether you should go to the doctor or not go to the doctor. Prabhupada talks about people who go to a guru asking to be healed of some disease, and he says, if you want to be healed of a disease, you go to a doctor. And we see that Prabhupada went to doctors, but sometimes you may see you're not going to go to a doctor. One devotee recently who left her body, she was feeling sick, she did go to her doctor, and the doctor said, you know, you've got advanced cancer, and she said, oh, okay, I'm not going to bother to take any treatment. But whether to take treatment, not to take treatment, to go to a doctor, not to go to a doctor, that I see as an individual decision that one understands if one is surrendered to Krishna. And that's, I don't see how you can make a rule, the concept people in some religions have, that any attempt to do anything whatsoever is indicative of a lack of faith in God. So they don't go to a doctor, but do they do anything? Do they just sit there and not move? No. So this is, of course, there are some Abhidhamma devotees who've done that. There was one python-like devotee that Prahlad Maharaj met who was making no endeavor for anything. He wasn't even moving. And he said, whatever I need will come to me by the will of God. So that may be a particular kind of a vow, a particular kind of practice for a particular devotee, but we can't say that that's a general principle. Just like, why just disease? You know, let's take food. So most of us make some endeavor in our life related to getting food. We work at some job to earn some money to get food, and we purchase the food and we prepare it and we make some effort. Right? But you have, even the sannyasis, generally they make some effort. They beg. Even Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a sannyasi. He was begging for his food. It's explained when he went to South India. He was begging from door to door for some food. Madhukari, it's called. But then we have Madhavendra Puri, who didn't. Madhavendra Puri was not making any effort to get food. I mean, even Raghunath Das Goswami made some endeavor to get food. So first he was taking money from his parents, then he was, I forget the exact order, but he was going to the charity booth, he was staying by the gate. Finally, he went to where they were throwing out the old rice, and he took that rice and washed it and ate it. So even he was making some endeavor. But then we find Madhavendra Puri, who was making no endeavor. Madhavendra Puri didn't do anything whatsoever to get food. And then we find when he went to Vrindavan that Krishna appeared before him and he said, why are you fasting? He said, in my village no one fasts. And he personally brought Madhavendra Puri milk. Actually, our god brother Ayendra one time took a vow like that he was not going to make any effort for food. And some days he had to fast. I think he said one time he fasted for 7 days in a row because nobody brought him any food. There's that conversation between Lord Chaitanya and Srivast Thakur, where Lord Chaitanya said to Srivast Thakur, what are you doing to maintain your large family? And he said, well, the first day I'll fast, and the next day I'll fast, and by the third day I'll jump in the Ganges. And Lord Chaitanya said, even if the goddess of fortune has to go out with the begging bowl, still you'll get your food. I'll arrange personally for you to get your food. So that may be there. That may be, as I said, the vow of particular devotees, but Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that nobody can maintain their body without working. So one has to do some sort of work, and what work one does is going to be dependent on one's varna and one's ashrama and one's particular situation. If one is in the renounced orders, then one is going to do a different kind of work in order to maintain the body than one does in the grihastha ashram, and depending on what varna one's in. But one always does so with the dependence on the Lord. And whether one eats or not, whether one gets medical care or not, what kind of medical care one gets, always Krishna is the protector. The degree of faith that we have in the Lord of our protector is evidenced not as much in do we go to the doctor or not, do we work at a job or not, but it's evidenced much more in our degree of inner peace and happiness. So if someone says, well, you know, I'm just depending on Krishna and I'm not going to, are they happy or are they always in anxiety? are they attached to the result? So that you can see. Whether you do something external or not is very individual. It's individual according to a particular person, and it's individual particular circumstance and time in a person's life, and it's individual according to their particular varna and ashram and what service they're doing for Krishna. You can't make some rule that dependence on Krishna is evidenced only and solely by one's by whether or not one works or whether or not one goes to a doctor.
Thanks, thank you. Great answer.
Anybody else have any question?
Yes, I have a question, but it's not real important, but I was just wondering, you know, what I've read this book, you know, a number of times, and what Srila Prabhupada is saying about everything is under Krishna's control, and as far as the threat of destroying the world by, you know, nuclear explosions or something like that, that's just not going to happen. They don't have the power to do it. What would you say about, there's probably hundreds of documentaries and books written about how at any moment somebody could press the button, and with all the submarines around the world and the nuclear warheads, within a few moments the whole civilization could be leveled. This is exactly the opposite of what Srila Prabhupada is saying here. So how would you address that?
Very simply, that Mari Krishna Rakhe Ke, Rakhe Krishna Mari Ke. First of all, could they really destroy the whole world? I mean, would they really be able to destroy the whole world? That's questionable. Even if they pushed all their buttons and so forth and so on. And second of all, these things are not fully under their control. If they were fully under their control, then everything would always work the way they want it to work. But it doesn't. Just like recently there was this plane crash in San Francisco. Why? Nobody wanted the plane to crash. But it crashed anyway. They tried to protect and there was destruction. Similarly, you may try to destroy and not be able to. What was in 9/11? So there were three planes that hit their target and one didn't. There was another plane that didn't. It went down in a field. They're assuming its target was the White House, but it didn't hit it. And so many things could have happened. You know, we don't know exactly what happened. The presumption is that the passengers were able to overpower the terrorists. But my point is that your attempt at destruction may not work. Your bomb may be a dud. The guidance mechanism may fail. So many things can go wrong that it doesn't happen. It doesn't have that result. We're not the supreme controller. Mari Krishna Rakhe Ke, Rakhe Krishna Mari Ke. We have this experience all the time. You know, as I was saying, this is even true with yourself. You can try to protect yourself and fail, and you can try to destroy yourself and fail. Most people who try to commit suicide fail to do so. You don't even have the power to kill yourself. But you speak of the world. You just don't. There's other factors involved. To think that I can control all the factors is hubris. You can't do it for protection and you can't do it for destruction. If Krishna doesn't want something to be destroyed, then it ain't going to be destroyed. And if Krishna doesn't want something protected, it's not going to be protected. I mean, look, there was all this talk of an imminent atomic war for years. We grew up, you know, those of us who were around my age, we grew up with this. We grew up, like you're saying, with the documentaries. I was talking about this the other day. I grew up seeing movies of something going wrong and the whole world blowing up. They were scary. I mean, I remember, I was a little kid, watched this movie called Failsafe, how there was a computer glitch. And New York was blown up, you know, and I was from New York, so it was particularly frightening for me as a child. They showed us this, you know, showed us this movie in school. Hare Krishna. But, you know, New York didn't get blown up. There was the Cold War and so forth and so on, and it didn't. It wasn't the will of God. I mean, something it's very interesting. In the last World War, well, who were the losers? Germany and Japan, right? They lost the war. And part of the punishment given to them by the international community was that those countries were not allowed to spend very much money on their military anymore. They were only allowed to have the bare minimum military for defense. They weren't allowed to build up a military that would allow them to engage in aggression. And what was the result of that? The result of that was that they had a whole lot more money to build up their countries. And so Germany and Japan are two of the most economically successful countries in the world today. And it's interesting that the countries that lost the war ended up to be the countries that were more prosperous. Mare Krishna, Rake K, Rake Krishna, Mare K. We're not the controllers. And if we think we're the controllers, we're fools.
Okay.
Anybody else have any question or comment? Okay, thank you very much. I'll go to Srila Prabhupada.